The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Germany is suddenly talking about nuclear weapons, and not on the fringes, but at the very top of government. Chancellor Friedrich Merz has confirmed that Germany and key European allies have opened discussions on a joint nuclear deterrence. This is a major shift. For decades, Berlin has avoided even hinting at nuclear ambitions. But now a former German foreign minister from the anti-nuclear Green Party, of all places, says Europe may need its own atomic bomb because it can no longer rely solely on the United States. So what's happening behind the scenes? Is Europe preparing for a world where America steps back? When you talk about nuclear sharing, you talk about Germany hosting American nuclear weapons. Do German armed forces maintain those weapons? Would they ever be involved in the deployment of those weapons? What exactly is meant by that?
So the sharing involves that the nuclear weapons are owned by the United States, and still the US president needs to decide whether to use them. But actually, the idea is that in a case of a crisis, they would be mounted on German fighter jets, and these fighter jets would be flown by German pilots. The Germans cannot use them on their own, so the codes are with the Americans. But in case of use, very much German citizens, German soldiers would be involved.
I think there will be a discussion among Europeans and should be a discussion about the nuclear deterrent. But it has to be European and inside the logic of NATO.
This is also the sign of, our times, that, that we have this thinking when it comes to a lot of countries in the world that whether we need a nuclear weapon, which is very dangerous development.
Ho-hum, a little talk coming out of Germany, right at the top of its government about nuclear weapons, the need for nuclear weapons. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this good Monday morning or evening or night or whatever it might be. When you watch the show, you can get to the live stream of this program at the website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. So just think about some of the common narratives or themes, whatever you want to call it. We hear so much in this world about peace, the peacekeepers or the ambassadors for peace. They're traveling the world and they have many good reports. They have a lot of positive things to report. And then you're hearing a lot about Jesus. I mean, it was at the big awards show. I think it was for music last night. I saw some of the clips. We have a montage, in fact, showing the celebrities, the influential people that have received Jesus. We had a Life and Teachings episode. Well, I'll get to that in a second. The narratives, the themes, don't get distracted. Peace, peace, peace. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And of course, nukes, nukes, nukes. You need some nukes. I mean, in a world like today, it's a sign of the times. In a world like the world we're living in, you have to have nukes. You have to have a lot of nuclear weapons. The world, as I've said, as the Trumpet has reported, tomorrow's news today, the world is arming for war. That's the truth. And all of these developments, I mean, this is like the perfect storm for the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, specifically the Olivet prophecy, but even Paul in 1 Thessalonians, when they say peace, peace, sudden destruction's coming. The Bible also has to say a lot about shallow religion. Jesus said, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, is a disciple or a student of Christ. You know, there's quite a few passages that talk about, even the disciple, I read him this morning. He had performed these miracles, feeding thousands miraculously, walking on water. Christ, I mean. Then feeding thousands more miraculously. And he rebuked the disciples and he said, your hearts are hardened. You won't believe. Beware the sin of the Pharisees, hypocrisy. Beware the sin of the Herodians, worldliness. Beware the sin of the Sadducees, the sin of unbelief. You just won't believe. There's verses in the Gospels that talk about Jesus upbraiding the crowds that that heard him speak because of their unbelief, because of their hardness of hearts, because of their evil hearts. All the talk in the world about Jesus does not remove the nuclear threat that we're facing. You can't talk Jesus, 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 and build nuke after nuke after nuke, and then just carry on as if we're going to grow and grow and improve and progress and peace is going to spread. This world needs a reality check. And it's coming. This is a montage of, as I say, some of the influential people talking a lot about Jesus Christ. Clip 14.
If there was a pill that could make you as nice as the people that I go to church with, everybody would be on it.
Yeah.
They are the nicest people you will ever encounter. When we leave,
are they nice or are they kind?
They're kind.
Yeah, they're kind.
Kind and nice. They're all the above. If you get just to the teachings of Christ, I can't find any faults in it. Like, it's all about being kind. It's all about this idea that we're all in this together and that you're supposed to lift each other up and look after each other. There's no faults in it. It's not like you have to kill the non-believers. It's not like you get to rape and pillage for the non-believers and the infidels must die. There's none of that. It's definitely a better framework for living your life.
And immediately I felt the Holy Spirit, which I'd never felt before, come upon me. And I just knew in that moment that I needed Jesus. And I can't explain it to you because it's so bizarre to explain, but just this light turned on. And I got on my knees and I called my dad and I said, can you help me accept Jesus? And he was like, what? And I was like, I know this is insane, but can you help me accept Jesus? So he praised me through a prayer of repentance.
No one's got it together, you know? We do got a hope. And his name is Jesus and he's changed my life.
I know they're going to try to kick me off here, so just let me try to get this out. First of all, Jesus, I hear you and I'm listening, Lord. I am listening, Lord. And I want to tell y'all right now, Jesus is for everybody. Jesus is not owned by one political party. Jesus is not owned by no music label. Jesus is Jesus, and anybody can have a relationship with him. I love you, Lord.
And I assume there's quite a bit of sincerity there. They believe what they've been taught to believe, what they've heard growing up about Jesus, about religion. You know, in a lot of ways, when I see this, I think, what an opportunity for this new podcast we have, The Life and Teachings of Jesus Christ. Joe Rogan said he's looked into the teachings of Christ and he can't find any fault with them. And well, I agree. I agree with him on that. We are in 100% agreement. I was telling the students this morning, though, I said, wait till he gets to Matthew 24, what it says in the Olivet Prophecy about what's coming. Do the preachers get into this today? The episode we had over the weekend, God will not accept you as you are. He won't. That's what the Bible says. I mean, there are several verses, I covered it in that show, that say, if you don't do this, this, and this, you can't be a disciple of Christ. And you know about the instance in Matthew 19 where the young man went away sorrowful because he couldn't be a disciple of Christ. He wasn't prepared to give up this world. This morning in class, we went through Matthew 16 and the very first mention of the word church, you'll find it in Matthew 16 and verse 18. The Greek word is ekklesia. It means called out ones. It doesn't mean a physical building on a street corner. If you're coming into the church, you have been called by God. John 6, 44. You have been called out of this world, the ways of this world. Revelation 12, 9 says the whole world is deceived. So when you look through the Gospels, just to key in on the Gospels as one example, the teachings of Christ, you understand why he constantly confronted religious people of his day, Jesus did, and he exposed their evil, their hearts. Matthew, which verse is it? Matthew 15 and verse 19, for out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies. There's that section where Christ talks about the church for the first time. I mean, before that, he gives special attention to Peter, and he talks about the foundation of the church being built upon Jesus Christ as the chief cornerstone, and then the other apostles and the prophets of old, they would make up the foundation, part of the foundation of the church as well. Ephesians 2, verses 19 and 20 bring that out. And he had some special instruction for Peter, who was going to be the chief apostle. And he said, you know, who do men say that I am? And Peter said, you're Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, well, blessed are you, Simon, for God revealed it to you. God had to open your mind and show you. And then he talked about Peter having the authority to bind and loose. And then guess what happened a few verses later? Christ said, listen, we're in the last year of my ministry, and you're going to have to prepare yourselves for what's coming. We're heading to Jerusalem eventually, and I'm going to be crucified, beaten and crucified. And guess what, Peter, the chief apostle, the one who would become the chief apostle, said to Christ, he rebuked Christ. He said, no way that's happening. And Christ then said, get behind me, Satan. Jesus Christ called Peter, his disciple, the soon-to-be chief apostle, called him Satan. Why? What was Satan doing to his thinking? Well, Peter was thinking like the world thinks. Human reasoning. Peter was worshiping his own opinion. And Christ had to set him straight. That's the Christ of the Gospels. And that just shows how, well, as I told the students, it shows how quickly we can veer off course and begin to think like the devil. And Christ has to show us. God has to reveal it. And then we have to be willing to repent and change. Because God won't just accept us as we are. We can't just show up, like I said in that Life and Teachings podcast. We can't just have a deathbed declaration saying that I've received Jesus into my heart. It doesn't happen with the snap of a finger. I'll read you the section of Scripture that talks about Christ. You know, Christ saying, you know, look, you've got to count the cost. And if you're not prepared to do this, you can't be a disciple of mine. Well, I thought the door was wide open. I thought anybody could. Listen to this from Mr. Armstrong. We played this on the Life and Teachings podcast. If you haven't seen that yet, you can get to it at thetrumpet.com. Just go to the video tab at the top and pull down. I think we've produced 6 episodes already. The 6th one will be playing this next weekend. It's on a few TV stations even around the country as well. But of course, you can get to it at the website anytime that you'd like to see it. This is Mr. Armstrong from a World Tomorrow program back in the 70s, clip 15.
Brethren, the greatest mistake that the churches have made, the most universal mistake in understanding, which leads to universal sin, is the idea that everybody is lost unless he gets saved. I tell you, the average church today, calling themselves Christian, has an idea that life is like a one-way trip on a railroad train. But it's just like you get on board and you're on a long all-day trip, that's your whole lifetime, and already you are condemned to go to hell. Now, at the end of the line, there is a switch in the track, and it's thrown down to shoot you straight down to hell when you get there. Now, if at any time in the, in that whole journey you say, all right, I accept Christ, well, that changes the switch and throws it so that now when you get there, it'll send you right up to heaven. And then they sing, it's all settled long ago. Once saved, always saved. It's all settled. There's nothing more to it. It's just believing that.
He said, that's the greatest mistake the churches make. The once saved, always saved. Just receive Jesus into your heart, and there's nothing else really to do. Jesus did it all for you. But consider that passage, count the cost. It's in Luke 14. Verse 25 says, and there went great multitudes with him. And he turned and said, if any man comes to me and hates not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. Hate means to love less. So, number one, you've got to love God more than anyone or anything else. That's the essence of the first commandment. And if you don't, if you're not willing to love God, and of course, love is keeping the commandments, 1 John 5. So there's something to it. It's not just a feeling or a sentiment. Love is action. Love is outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. God is love. And the way he lives, his lifestyle became the law that we uphold and promote and live ourselves. The law is holy and just and good. It's righteous. Romans 7:12. Verse 27, and whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. As I said on the podcast, I mean, just take note of the word cannot. Do you hear this from the preachers today? Do you hear them preach, if you don't do this, you can't be a disciple. If you don't have the love of God, if you don't love God more than your own physical family, friends, associates, acquaintances, colleagues, bosses, employees, even your own life, what does it mean to love God more than you love your own self? Verse 33, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsakes not all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. In other words, you have to do something. It's not enough just to be nice. I mean, there's a lot of nice people, looking at it on the surface, that are actually involved in some heinous crimes and evil doing. And we all have to fight that evil heart, the pulls of the flesh, human nature, Satan's nature. I told you about a very nice woman right here in the Edmond community last week that got caught up in some horrible, horrible violence brought upon her by family inside of her own home. You can't just go to church once a week and smile and then everybody assume that, well, it must just be fantastic. It must be a wonderful life. It must be a life that is living the laws of God. People can fool human beings, but we can't fool God. I mean, the scriptures say the eyes of the eternal are on us continually, always. It's not easy being a true Christian. And preachers that would say it's easy, there's nothing to it, it's just a feeling that happens one night, and you say a prayer over the phone and everything's good. I went through John 6. Well, look at the end of, so many passages come to mind. Look, if the teachings of Jesus, if you can't find fault in any of them, well, that's a wonderful statement to make. And I think it really does give God's work a pretty good opening to go ahead and look into the Gospels and the teachings of Christ. But there's probably going to be quite a few religious people that don't like to hear what it says. because they've been told so many other things that contradict the Bible, that contradict the teachings of Christ. It's right at the end. Christ has been resurrected. He's giving instructions to his disciples, tells them to, you know, wait in Jerusalem for the power of the Holy Spirit that would come on the Feast of Pentecost, a holy day that most people in the traditional Christian world have never even heard of. And yet it's right there in Acts chapter 2. He says in verse 19, go you therefore and teach all nations, or make disciples or students of all nations. That's what the next Life and Teachings podcast is about. That'll play this weekend. What it means to be a disciple or a student of Christ. I mean, many of you, you've been students. If you're a serious-minded student pursuing, you know, a degree in engineering, I mean, you have to take classes seriously. You've got to do outside study. You've got to think it through. You've got to receive training. You've got to get an entry-level job. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. But religion, well, we're told that's different. Jesus did everything for you. Just kick it, kick back, and receive him into your heart. That's not the truth of the Bible. If you're a student of Christ, you are in training. You're in training to assist him for all eternity. So he says, make disciples of all nations, baptize them, teach them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. I mean, you should just do a word search on command or commanded in the Gospels, because that word has fallen out of favor in the religious community. What I have commanded you, you teach them and command them as well. And just back up. Look at verse 16. Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee. Judas had already left because he betrayed Christ. He was right there. He received the training for 3.5 years. He received Jesus in that sense. But was Judas always saved? Once he was with Jesus those first 6 months, you mean that didn't just count forever? No, Judas actually betrayed Christ at the very end. Judas actually went out and committed suicide. Judas also thought he was pretty righteous. Well, he thought he was conniving and scheming because he just loved poor people. He was a nice guy. And when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. I mean, that's talking about the 11. 3.5 years with the Son of God, disciples or students of Christ, and they still had their doubts. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to go all the way with this one. I mean, they considered going away sorrowful, like the young man in Matthew 19. Well, they didn't. They stayed faithful. They remained in Jerusalem. They received the power of the Holy Spirit. And they went on to do great things for God. And guess what? Most of them followed in the steps of Christ all the way through to martyrdom. That's the way the world viewed Jesus Christ. That's the way the world received Christ and his first century apostles. They didn't like it. They didn't like the message. They didn't like the fact that they used words like commanded or referred to the Ten Commandments or obedience to God's law, submission to his government. It's all there in the Gospels. John 6, he's just performed this spectacular miracle. God did it through him. Fed thousands of people miraculously. And then taught them about the significance of that miracle, what it really pointed to. Spiritual food. And how that you're going to have to really work to gather up all the fragments to consume that manna from heaven. I got into that last week. I don't need to repeat it here, but just go to the end of John 6. It's a long chapter. But it says in verse 60, many therefore of his disciples, when they had heard his disciples. I mean, there were more than just the 12 that were, you know, following him around and intently interested in what he was teaching. But it says here, many of his disciples, when they had heard this, said, "This is a hard saying. Who can hear it?" And Jesus knew, he knew in himself, that his disciples murmured at it. And he says unto them, "Does this offend you? Are you offended by what I'm saying? I'm giving you instruction from God. This is revelation from God." And many were offended by it. They didn't like the message. They weren't willing to follow. It says, "What? And if you shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before, it is the spirit that quickens, the flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you," he says, "that believe not." For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believe not and who should betray him. A lot of them betrayed Christ. That's the truth about the first century. That's the truth about the ministry of Christ. Jesus Christ was persecuted. He was on the run. He was betrayed. Even at the last, those disciples that said they would never leave him or forsake him, they took off running when the going got tough. That's what it takes to be a true Christian. That's been the history. I mentioned the true history of God's true church on a recent program. You look at the 2,000-year history of God's church. It springs from the ministry of Christ. And he said, "Therefore said I unto you," verse 65, "that no man can come to me except it were given unto him of my Father." You can't come to me unless God draws you, unless God leads you. You can't do it yourself. You can't do it on your own. You can't just show up and, you know, bust your way through the door. It's of God. God has to perform a miracle. God has to open our mind. And then we can begin to see. Verse 66, "From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him." That's John 6 and verse 66. Why, I look into the teachings of Christ, I can't find any fault with them. I love it. Well, it seems like a lot of people in the first century didn't love it. They didn't like it. Even the ones that followed him to a point or called him Lord, Lord. It was a religion without substance, and that doesn't cut it with God. God's not going to accept that. Matthew 15, verse 8, This people draws near to me with their mouth and honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Their heart is far from me. How do you know? Well, I mean, God, in God's church, God's going to give his ministers a measure of discernment. But even there, I mean, we have to, you know, in counselings and so on, we have to ask questions and probing questions at times. And try. There's a proverb that says, "He that is first in his cause seems just or right, but you've got to go and get the other side as well." So God will lead and help. The eyes of the eternal are upon us. As I say, God reads our hearts and minds. But you can't just walk into a grouping and say, "Oh, well, everyone seems so nice." I mean, that may be true of a church meeting. It may be true of just some, you know, convention of some kind. "The people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me." It's exactly the same problem Ezekiel prophesied of in Ezekiel 33. It talks about, oh, they love the message. It's like a lovely song. It's a tune that just plays, but their heart goes after their covetousness. You look into the Gospels, you look into the teachings of Christ, and it really does expose. It really does expose the evil from within. You heard there in that montage. I mean, here he's talking about all these nice people that he encounters and opens the statement with an F-bomb. A profanity. And the Bible has a lot to say about that. shallow religion. We're going to have to learn some hard lessons. Christ lamented the fact that even his disciples were hard-hearted. You know, he talked about the leaven of the Pharisees, and they just immediately assumed that, it must be that, you know, he's hungry and we didn't have bread with us. And Christ, you know, just would shake his head and go, you saw these miracles and you really aren't grasping the significant takeaways? Lots of talk about peace, lots of talk about Jesus, and lots of talk about nukes, even in Germany. You heard the cold open. Here's more from Deutsche Welle, clip 3.
These French tactical nuclear weapons could also be mounted on German fighter jets and then be flown by German pilots, or Germany leases, borrows, buys French fighter jets, and then, you know, like German pilots would fly those French and fighter jets. So this is a possibility that, you know, just from a technological perspective, could be implemented fairly rapidly, if the political consensus, of course, and the political will is there, and this is kind of still a question mark.
But you haven't mentioned the one other option, which would be that Germany acquired its own nuclear weapons.
Today, in 2026, Germany probably still has the technological expertise to do that, because they're still nuclear scientists who could probably enrich fissile material to such a degree that a nuclear weapon could be produced.
I think they do have the technology there to do it, and to do it quickly. But before that, she's talking about German fighters, jets, using American weapons or French weapons. Who was telling you that decades ago? That those nukes, those weapons that are all around Europe, that don't belong to Germany, Germany's going to use them. I mean, that's tomorrow's news today. Open discussion now. Peace all over the place. Jesus, I mean, what a resurgence in talk about Jesus. And then, nukes. We got to get a lot of nukes as well. Deutsche Welle, this headline. Germany, the Bundeswehr's military spending spree. Nobody's paying attention to this. We have eyes, but we're not seeing what we need to see. We have ears, but we're not hearing what we need to hear. I think it was Helen Keller who said that what a shame it would be to be able to see, but to not have vision. Germany's military, the Bundeswehr, is currently on a spending spree. It has more than 108 billion euro at their disposal this year, a gigantic, unprecedented sum. This is being financed both by the official federal budget and special funds. It says the money's intended to make the Bundeswehr, which has been subject to decades of cutbacks, more powerful and modern. There's also time pressure. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius fears that Russia could be capable of attacking NATO as early as 2029, or NATO territory. What is the Bundeswehr buying with the many billions? And how well is the rapid rearmament working? Here are some notable examples. First ever combat drones. Drone warfare. Advanced technology. Kamikaze drones. Listen to my father's Key of David program from a few months ago, clip 9.
Artificial intelligence is still something Europe could shape. He noted in a television interview with Polls Fortalk on June 28, 2019, quote, "We have a well-established industry which still has to become far more connected to the new technologies. But once this happens, it will develop a totally different field of power than a purely technological firm. This is something much more powerful." Is that what we need in warfare? Where is the peace? Where is the peace in this world? Everybody's thinking about war and talking about peace. That's really, really a strange situation.
That's the message of a preacher of righteousness. You know, where, okay, there's talk about peace, but where is it? Where is the peace? I mean, you've got to look at the actions. You've got to look at what's happening on the ground. You can't just look at the surface and say, oh, well, he's nice. Oh, well, we can work with him. We want everybody. That's what President Trump said about the Board of Peace. We want everybody in it. And then the next day said, except Canada. Canada's out. Why? Well, I mean, he criticized me. Putin, he's in. We got him. We got Putin. We got Hamas. We got Qatar. We got all those people. Thankfully, Canada's out. And then you've got Europeans. I know it's a rehash, but bear with me. You've got European nations saying thanks, but no thanks. Germany. Germany wants nukes, and Germany says no to the Board of Peace. It says here, although the Bundeswehr purchases most of its new equipment from German and European defense companies, some large orders go to U.S. corporations. One example is the F-35 stealth bomber. One reason for this choice, it says later, is that the F-35s can be armed with U.S. nuclear bombs in an emergency. What? So we've got the bombs there on European soil, and then because we want Germany to have a new war machine, we're going to help build them F-35s, then send the F-35s to Germany. Well, the nukes are already there. They've got everything they need. And this is a good thing. This will bring peace. I mentioned the quote, I forget when it was, a year or two ago, when Elon Musk, he said the only party that's going to save Germany is the AfD party, the alternate for Deutschland party, the far-right party. And then together with that statement, he says, you know, the children of parents or grandparents that made some bad decisions, they shouldn't be held to account. In other words, okay, so the grandparents of these Germans that fought in World War II as Nazis, well, that just should be erased. It should just be blotted out. We've got a fresh start. That's the essence of what President Trump said to the press pool in the presence of the German chancellor. Yeah, we want you to have a German war machine. General MacArthur wouldn't have wanted this, but hey, it's a different time. You look pretty nice. You look like a nice guy. That's human nature. Worse, that's will worship. Run amok, off the charts. This is from the German defense minister, clip 6.
We live in a different time. The international rule-based order is under pressure as never before. Rules are no longer respected. Incidentally, this is not only true for Vladimir Putin, to put it clearly, but also for others who want to annex Greenland and they're not. The rules-based order is under pressure. That's one thing. But at the same time, there is a military threat again in Europe, because the war takes place 2 flight hours from Berlin. And Putin has always made clear that he's not only concerned with Ukraine. And that's why we have to strengthen ourselves. We have to be able to defend ourselves. We have to buy materials and weapons. Yes, and we all agree that we would rather live in a world where this would not be necessary. But not doing it means encouraging a potential attacker to try it. And our task must be to acquire the skills that put us in position to be able to say that we can wage a war. But we only have to be able to do it in order not to have to do it. To have that ability means to say, we scare you off.
Looks like a pretty nice guy. The German defense minister saying that we've got to be able to defend ourselves. Well, because Putin. Then you got Orange Hitler on the other side. We have to buy materials and weapons. We have to be in a position where we can wage a war, says the German defense minister. And all the commentators, they don't even bat an eye. Doesn't faze them. Listen, we've got peace in Jesus. One more from this. Actually, it's a different one. This is the EU foreign policy chief. I'm not sure how to pronounce the name. Clip 7.
In the world that we are right now, we really need to build up our own defenses. And that's why, part of my work is really to try to bring member states together to do things on defense together, also with our partners, because so far, you know, on the European level, we have the ministers of justice meeting all the time, and they already think European, whereas the defense ministers have always been like, you know, national budgets, mm-hmm. national decision making. And of course, it's a competence of the member states. Nobody's taking that away, but thinking that member states are too small to do it alone. If we do it together, we can actually cover a bigger area. I mean, take air defense, for example. I mean, doing it together, it's expensive.
This same Deutsche Welle article later on, it talks about, well, again, she's just saying it, we've got to do it together. And we know the 10 kings are going to band together and have one mind, as Revelation 17 says. But it says here, the Ministry of Defense is keeping the details of the project secret for good reason. It has to do with AI and all these things that they're, these new technologies. But then listen to this. I mean, these are hard numbers right here. At the end of last year, the Bundestag also approved a large sum for new uniforms and personal equipment for a total of 460,000 soldiers. Critics questioned whether this amount was excessive. After all, the Bundeswehr currently only has 184,000 active duty soldiers, but it's set to grow significantly to 460,000, including reservists. So, yeah, we're going to bump it from 184,000 to nearly a half million, a half million man army. And then all of the F-35s and nuclear weapons to go with it, as well as the kamikaze drones, the AI technology, and so on. Don't forget, Bible prophesies of it with words like whirlwind. But history teaches us that they're masters at the blitzkrieg. They come at you fast. They move fast. They're moving fast now to build the war machine. Lots of peace, lots of talk about Jesus, and lots of nukes, lots of arming for war. The dear leader, Barack Obama, he tweeted out a link to this New York Times article, "Let the arms race begin." Obama suddenly is very concerned about an arms race. It's really, they're aiming at President Trump here, but there is this nuclear arms control pact between the U.S. and Russia. I guess it expires this week, this Thursday. The New York Times says the New START, that was the deal, limited each side's arsenals to 1,550 deployed strategic warheads. And Obama and the New York Times, they talked about how this peace pact, it was so good. I mean, it's amazing how when human beings, even powerful, influential human beings, when they look at this world, when they look at the future of this world, when they look at the past, I mean, they find so many good things. And of course, they do this largely by revising the history or by focusing just solely on certain things or a political agenda when it comes to, you know, forecasting the future. In this case, well, now Trump's in office. Yeah, the pact it's ending on Thursday or whenever, and it's dangerous. There's going to be an arms race. Well, the arms race is happening right now. And nothing in this New START pact between America and Russia, nothing has slowed down Germany, for example, building up its war machine. People need to wake up and see what's happening in this world. The article says these kinds of restraints are why the world no longer faces the mountain of warheads built up during the Cold War. I think it takes maybe 300 nuclear weapons to wipe out humanity. I mean, we don't know for sure because it's never happened yet. But each side having just 1,500. Oh, okay, so we can only wipe out human civilization 20 times over instead of 200 times. And this is seen as a great victory. The world is arming for war. I mean, the underlying assumption in this New York Times piece is that START treaty actually did so much to bring peace. Here again, peace derangement. We've been living through a little more than a century of war. The two worst wars in terms of number of casualties in human history. That's happened in our modern era, in our time. And another one is on the way. I meant to get to this story about the Panama Canal, because here again, tomorrow's news today, you hear it first at the trumpet. First, let me just give you the latest. This is from Fox News on the developments with respect to the canal, clip 4.
I want to get your take on this headline this past week, which I think is a huge story. I know you do, too. You posted about it. Panama's top court has ruled that the contract granted to Lee Ka-shing C.K. Hutchinson to operate the two ports near the Panama Canal is unconstitutional. That's a big story.
I was with President Kevin Roberts when he appeared live on your show from the canal last March, because we were down visiting it and visiting right. with President Mulino. And at that point, they were saying, oh, no, no, there's no Chinese influence. There's no problem with China. It's an economic decision. Well, no, that got reversed this week because of the sustained engagement of the Trump administration and the president himself. He knows how vital the Panama Canal is to our economy. If you want to shut us off, shut off the canal. It's intolerable that China would control those ports. And now the Panama Supreme Court has declared that contract null and void. The Danish company Maersk is going to come in, and then we'll see if BlackRock takes them over.
China's on the way out. I mean, America didn't go down and seize the canal. Trump was campaigning, saying they need Panama, we need Greenland. But look at what's happening. This is from the March 2025 trumpet, almost a year ago. It says, challenging the United States in its own backyard. The title is How America Won and Lost the Panama Canal. And he says about the current challenge, challenging the U.S. in its own backyard could end up diminishing China's power. It would be a real loss for China to lose control of the Panama Canal, yet that might just happen. It happened last week. You heard about it in the trumpet last year. If you don't have a trumpet subscription, make sure you call our operators today and request a free one-year subscription. There's no cost or obligation, and you have this insight into the future. You get vision. What a shame it would be to be able to see, but to not have vision. This is from my father's program. Well, when you think about what God said about Jeroboam, he's going to bring him back to save America by Jeroboam's hand. And then, you know, 2 Kings 4, 14 and verse 25 talks about the coasts of Israel being restored, the war to recover. That's in the context of the stolen election. And we talked briefly about the Fulton County FBI raid last week and all the corruption. Yes, the stealing that's being exposed. It was exposed 4 or 5 years ago. But people were blind to it, willfully blind to it. There have been some victories, some pretty impressive victories during the Jeroboam second term thus far. You look at the Maduro raid, the strikes on Iran, and maybe more strikes to come. And there has been a show of power. And then you look at the expansion of America's boundaries in that sense. What happened in Panama last week would certainly seem to fall within the spirit of that as well. This is the Key of David from January of last year, so over a year ago. Bible prophecy reveals how we lost the Panama Canal. I think that's the program that became that March trumpet article, clip 10.
Mr. Donald Trump has warned that the Panama Canal may have to be brought back to the United States. He's concerned about the high fees that are paid, and about 70% of that business is from the U.S. itself. And they, of course, sold it back to Panama for $1. Mr. Trump's also concerned about the control of the Chinese now over the canal, at least at both ends. They can be in charge so much that they can even stop the ships from coming through or whatever they're trying to do. China just really has controls at both ends of that Panama Canal. And Trump said about that, if the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to us in full and without question. To the officials of Panama, please be guided accordingly. So he is talking a lot about this. And then he goes on to say it was solely for Panama to manage, not China or anyone else. We would and will never let it fall into the wrong hands. That's what he is saying.
That's from January last year, January of 2025. This is from Axios last week. In a win for the Trump administration, Panama's Supreme Court on Thursday canceled a crucial Panama Canal ports contract operated by a firm with ties to the Chinese government. Axios exclusively reported earlier that the White House expected the ruling Thursday evening to cancel the contract. It says, removing Chinese influence in the Western Hemisphere is central to President Trump's strategy to reassert unquestioned U.S. dominance from the Straits of Magellan to Greenland. I mean, there's your expanding borders. What does it say? Second Kings 14 and verse 25 talks about the coasts of Israel being restored under Jeroboam. It's amazing how much detail God gives to us in his prophecies and how accurate that prophetic forecast always is, always. It says the administration's aggressive involvement in Panama is another big domino in Trump's Western Hemisphere plan this year. The U.S. military snatched Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro on January 3rd and took him to New York City to face federal drug trafficking charges. So what happened in Panama last Thursday night appears to be another pretty big victory for the Jeroboam administration. Here's one more clip from that Key of David program in January of 2025, clip 11.
Now, I believe China might not be so successful here. It could even diminish their power. But we don't know. But they certainly are a superpower status today. And it, in many ways, more powerful even the United States. So it would be a real loss if they were to lose, let's say, their power in the Panama Canal, and they just might do that. We don't know. But God just might give this gate back to America. I would not be shocked to see that happen, because there have been a lot of miracles that have happened during Donald Trump's political campaign.
This morning in class, I talked about, well, when he criticized the disciples for their hearts being hardened, he was basically saying, you're not appreciating just this string of miracles, feeding thousands, walking on water, feeding thousands again miraculously. You won't believe. When God performs a miracle, and like my father said, there have been many with the Jeroboam administration, I mean, that should increase our faith. That should build our faith in God, not in a human being, not in a movement or a political party, but our faith in the power, the supernatural, almighty power of the living God. I've got so much more, but we'll just push it back to tomorrow, perhaps. We've got a special presentation on Wednesday with Gadi Taub, the Israeli commentator that's coming over here for a visit. It's going to be on campus on Wednesday, so we'll sit down with him on Wednesday. You can look forward to that. One thing I've really appreciated over the last couple of weeks is just the variety that we've been able to get into on this show. That thanks in large part to our wonderful news gatherers. The team has really been assembling quite a lot of interesting, fascinating stories of prophetic significance. I've taken you a bit over, but we won't charge you for those extra 45 seconds. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.